Thank you, Mr. Janisich, and good afternoon and happy Sabbath to everyone. In a message that I gave this past spring, some of you remember me, may remember me briefly describing an incident I had as a substitute teacher. When I encountered a very striking-looking, tall, thin student with long, kind of pinkish blonde hair, heavy eye makeup, bright red lipstick, high-heeled shoes, long, silky, lacy black dress, who was turned out to be a boy. I've spoken about gender-related issues periodically, going back at least 9 years. But just when I think there's no more for me to say about the topic, I get surprised by some new aspect that I hadn't expected, or things have gone beyond what I expected. In the classes that I taught or substituted for last school year, there were 8 students that I became aware of who had, or what I would call, gender identity issues. 2 of them were girls who came up to me the first day of class last school year, and they informed me that they wanted to be called by a different, more masculine sounding name than the one that was on the roll sheet. One of them I could remember, and I called her by that more masculine. The other one I could never remember, and I called her by a more feminine name, but she didn't get on my case about it. But they came up to me, and they told me that the names they wanted to go by, and then they informed me that they were transgender students. Transgender. Well, what exactly is transgender? Apparently, transgender describes a person whose gender identity does not match the biological sex that they were assigned at birth. Or at least that's the most common definition I've found. Basically, they would see themselves as a boy trapped in a girl's body, or a girl trapped in a boy's body. Estimates vary, but transgender people reportedly make up between 0.3% and 0.6% of the U.S. population. That is, between 3 and 6 people out of every 1,000 would identify themselves as transgender. So the 2 of the girls, they identified themselves to me. 2 of these 8 were boys, one of whom I mentioned before, and then there was another one. I didn't really get to know them as well, didn't have as much interaction with them. The remaining 4 were girls who other teachers informed me that they considered themselves transgender. I wouldn't necessarily have known it with all of them, although one of them I did get to know fairly well, and sometimes she wanted me, or she wanted to be referred to as he or him, and then there were other times where she wanted to be referred to as it, and that was sort of a new one for me. I was also surprised to learn that at least one of the boys and at least one of the girls had administrative permission to use whichever bathroom they felt like using at the time. And that surprised me a little bit. I was talking to Mr. Keith Toms, who's a school superintendent down in California. He says, oh, yeah, that kind of stuff's been going on down there for quite a while now. And, I thought it was kind of new up here. And these were the 8 that I knew of. There were, however, others at the school that I'd seen who, by all appearances, certainly seemed to have gender identity issues. Actually, the technical term being used now is gender dysphoria. Gender dysphoria, D-Y-S-P-H-O-R-I-A. Exactly what's gender dysphoria? Well, new vocabulary for me. And it's defined as a condition that produces distress over transgender feelings. Up until year 2012, the American Psychiatric Association used the term gender identity disorder. And then a year later, the organization changed the designation to gender dysphoria, probably because the term disorder was offensive, I suspect. So with that as an introduction, I thought today we'd take a look at the topic of gender, our culture, and a biblical perspective, because the concept of gender in our culture is changing, and it's changing rapidly. Time magazine calls transgender rights America's next civil rights frontier. The New York Times has advocated a transgender crusade. And the former Times editor, a man named Andrew Rosenthal, calls those who question the transgender movement ignorant and stupid people. About 5 or 6 years ago, I experienced one step in the change in culture when I had to fill out a teacher survey form for the federal government. I think I've mentioned this to some of you at least. One point in the survey, wanted to know demographic information such as how old you were, how long you'd been teaching, what sex you were. And you filled in the survey by bubbling in these little bubbles next to the choices given. And for the sex and gender question, the choices were male, female. And the first time that I was aware of, transgender was one of the bubbles. But what startled me at that time was that there was a fourth bubble, for other. And I thought, well, okay, you can be a male, you can be female, you could switch between the two, but there's something else? What's this other? Nobody else seemed to, when I was filling, I was in a big room full of teachers at the time, but nobody else kind of looked confused about it, so I just went on. And at that time, though, I hadn't had a student who considered herself an it, so I suppose that would be one case or the other. I have since learned that there are LGBT advocacy groups, I get it out here, who are pushing an agenda and in a narrative that there are multiple other genders. January issue of National Geographic, I actually have a copy with me, they devoted almost the whole issue to gender issues. And one of the pages, there is a pictorial display and shows these at least 15 people. I think it was 15 people who represent a spectrum of different gender identities. There was, I'll just list some of them here, transgender male, transgender female, non-binary, not one or the other, queer, non-binary genderqueer, trans boy, androgynous, intersex non-binary. And it did include what we would call traditional male-female, men who think they're men and women who think they're women, which, by the way, is now referred to as cisgender. C-I-S-G-E-N-D-E-R, cisgender, another new vocabulary word. The magazine also presented the concept that gender is fluid. That is, our identity as a male or female not only lies on a spectrum, but it's on a sliding scale that can move back and forth. Sometimes we identify more as a female. Sometimes we identify more as a male. I think I've told some of you another story I encountered, too. It must have been about 10 or 15 years ago. Had a similar situation during my planning period. We were a little short of classrooms at the school, and the relationships teacher, Mrs. Johnson, who was about my age, kind of grandmotherly type, actually, and she'd come into my room, and she would teach a relationships class in there. And I asked, well, should I go to another room to do my planning? Oh, no, you can stay right there. And so I would sit in the room and do my work. We had two desks up the front, and she was kind of at one desk on one side of the room, and I was at the other side of the room. And And so I'd listen in on the classes, but mostly I'd just kind of do my work. And I remember I had a sort of an obnoxious student from one of my math classes, well, mischievous student, Jacob Buckendorf, I remember his name. If he's listening, I don't think he'd take offense at it, but he happened to be sitting right in front of my desk, right in the front row where I was working. Usually he kind of had his head down and maybe he was kind of sleeping, but I remember one time that they were talking about sexual orientation, or the teacher was, and she presented this idea that, well, your sexual preferences, she thought, were on kind of a sliding scale. And I kind of perked up my ears and I kind of looked, and she drew sort of a chart on the board, and she said, yeah, sometimes I think people are more attracted to females, and then sometimes they're attracted more to males, and they can kind of go back and forth. And I looked up about the same time Jacob looked up, and we kind of looked at each other, and we looked at the teacher, and we looked at each other again. And I thought, well, for once, Jacob and I have got a meeting of the minds. And he raised his hand, you know, and the teacher calls on him, says, yeah, Jacob. And he says, I don't think Mr. Hansen agrees with you on that. I don't think he did either, but anyway. But, yeah, so it's kind of a sliding scale sort of thing. In fact, let's see. National Geographic had a survey. They stated in a survey of 1,000 millennials, young people ages 18 to 34, that half of them think that gender is a spectrum. And some people fall outside the conventional categories. Things are changing. Maybe some of you noticed earlier this summer, or maybe it's late spring, there was an article I saw in the USA Today newspaper. A Canadian baby was issued a genderless ID card. The mother didn't want to have a gender registered with the birth of her child. She wanted the child to be able to decide for itself what gender, when it became of age or whatever. I don't know. Kind of crazy. And there were some recent court decisions I came across within the last month and a half. Let's see, there was a charter school in Minnesota agreed to pay a child's parents $120,000 because they were not making proper accommodations for their kindergarten child, who was born a boy but wanted to identify as a girl, a kindergartner. And there's a public school in Pittsburgh area. Three transgender students in the Pittsburgh area sued the district, and they won the case. Each family got $20,000 in attorney's fees because the district had a policy that required students to either use unisex restrooms or, it seemed reasonable, or the restroom that matches their biological sex. And that wasn't good enough, and they sued, and they won their case. And then there was a private school in California. This is, again, within the last 6 months here. It just got reported within the last month and a half. A transgender 8-year-old parents sued a private school so that this 8-year-old, let's see, 8-year-old boy wanted to use the girl's restroom and was not allowed to. And they sued and won $10,000. And it was a private school. And that just seemed very strange and the way things are heading here. Let's turn to Genesis 1, verse 27. It comes to gender. God's intent is pretty clear. And for those of us in the church, gender's a simple issue. Genesis 1, verse 27. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. God made mankind to be either male or female. Chromosomally, you were born with either XY, male, or XX, female chromosomes. And every cell in your body is, in a sense, either male or female. It has either the XY or the XX chromosomes. Let's also recall a relevant passage in Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy 22, verse 5. Deuteronomy 22, verse 5. Because the concept of gender and the way we express it is important to God. Deuteronomy 22, verse 5. A woman shall not wear anything that pertains to a man, nor shall a man put on a woman's garment, for all who do so are an abomination to the Lord your God. The issue here is not whether a woman should wear pants or a man can wear kilts or clothing that looks like a skirt. It's don't present yourself as a gender that you're not. God intended there to be a distinction between men and women. If you're XY, God intended you to be a man. If you're XX, God intended you to be a woman. So what causes people to want to defy their chromosomes? Well, the reasons can be complex. Gender and identity and the whole transgender issue can be very complicated. The reasons why a person would rather be a different gender are not all the same. There may be some commonalities for some transgender people, or maybe a lot of them, but there are some differences as well. I used to think people who are transgender were simply homosexuals and trying to be the opposite sex was their way of dealing with their homosexuality. But that's not always the case. There are, for example, heterosexual men who would still prefer to be a woman. They will dress, act, and sometimes even have surgery and take hormones to become more woman-like, yet they're still attracted to women. With regards to surgery and hormones, the April 15th edition of World Magazine had an article telling the stories of three transgendered individuals, two men and one woman, who actually underwent surgery and hormone therapy to change their gender. And all three of them came to regret it. One of them, a man named Walt Heyer, H-E-Y-E-R. In fact, I'll read some of his story from the article. Walt is a 76-year-old ex-transgender who speaks publicly about his regret and says he gets regular emails from despairing transgender men and women who found him through his website, sexchangeregret.com. Many underwent irreversible surgery and now regret it. They write him horrified and helpless. What do I do now? I feel like dying. Heyer said that every single person who contacts him reveals some kind of traumatic background and psychological scars. Their heartbreaking stories align with Heyer's own personal experience that transgenderism is an umbrella term for a group of mental disorders that have not yet been treated, and the consequences are devastating. According to studies, suicide rates are 20 times higher among transgender adults who undergo hormone therapy and sex reassignment surgery. Meanwhile, a 2014 study found that 63% of patients diagnosed with gender dysphoria had at least one co-occurring mental disorder, and 33% had major depressive disorders. That's why Heyer grates his teeth at the burgeoning pro-transgender narrative. This is the tragedy, he says. Not one of them or not one of these people needed to go through surgery. What they need is deep, effective, long-term psychotherapy, probably among other things. In all appearances, Walt Hired grew up a normal, healthy guy in Los Angeles, but inside he wrestled an invisible female personality named Crystal, who sought dominion over his male self. Kind of wonder about demon possession on some of this, but Crystal came to be when he was a little boy twirling a purple chiffon evening dress that his grandma, Mammy, had sewn for him. Little Walt saw approval in Grandma's eyes and compliments, something he so longed for from his own parents. By age six, Hire lay in bed wondering what it would be like as a girl. Grandma Mammy's private fashion show planted that seed in him. Then, sexual abuse from an uncle twisted his mind even further. The more pain he felt, the more he retreated into an imaginary world where he fantasized about being a girl. Gradually, that fantasy became an obsession. Being a girl, he says, was where I got adulation, all the things I desired. I felt loved, cared for. People don't realize how powerful that is, what an influence it has on young people. He soon began cross-dressing in private. The more he dressed as a girl, the more he wished he were female. When he was 21, Hire became engaged to a woman. Again, many transgenders are not homosexual. One day he invited her to his apartment, then walked out of his bedroom wearing a red skirt and a blouse. His young fiancée cocked an eyebrow and said, "Well, we'll work through this." Hire married in 1962, hoping marriage would fix his issue, whatever it was. It didn't. He and his wife had a daughter and a son, but that didn't cure him either. He soon began drinking harder and frequenting transvestite-friendly bars in full feminine getup. Someone at a bar referred him to a man named Paul Walker, a psychologist and founding president of an organization now known as the World Professional Association for Transgender Health. After a mere three sessions, Walker diagnosed Hire with gender dysphoria and recommended surgery. To edit the article just a little bit, Walt told his wife about the possibility of surgery, and she said, "No, that's enough. I can't take that." So she took the kids, divorced him. He underwent sex reassignment surgery and became a woman named Laura. His company terminated him. He blew a six-month severance package on cosmetic surgeries, hormone therapy, and child support. Got depressed, went back to drinking, became suicidal. A Christian counselor connected him with a church and a family that was willing to help him. And over a period of years, he detransitioned from Laura back to Walt. Going back to the article here, detransitioning back to Walt was messy, but Walt received multiple confirmations that he'd made the right choice. Walker, the original therapist who had approved his and recommended his surgery, wrote Walt an apology. "In approving sex reassignment surgery," he wrote, "I'd seen too many cases of post-surgical regret. I assure you that I share as best I can some of your pain, for this mistake has caused you." Later, multiple therapists diagnosed Walt as having dissociative disorder, also known as multiple personality disorder, characterized by disconnection from one's identity as a defense mechanism against psychological trauma. Today, Walt's birth records once again show and identify him as Walt Hire, a male. He no longer cross-dresses or drinks. He even met a tech geek named Casey, who in 1997 became his second wife. After months of friendship, Hire asked Casey whether she minded that he had a broken body. She said, "Well, Walt, everybody's broken. You're just broken on the outside." Some things cannot be restored. Even now, Hire breaks down into tears when he remembers his family. "I was so selfish to my ex-wife and kids," he said, and then he paused to control his spilling tears. "I would give anything." anything to change that. Heyer watched the public fawning over Bruce Jenner's transition to Caitlyn with horror and grief. The media, he said, is lying through their teeth, glorifying it, glamorizing it. Not one word of caution, not one word about the prevalence of suicide among transgenders. He knew from experience how much publicity can affect young minds. Now 76, Heyer will never need a razor or get his male organs back. But he acts and looks like a man, and spreading awareness about transgender regret has become his full-time job. He's written books, articles, and spoken at churches, universities, and conferences, and runs a website, sexchangeregret.com. He knows he's fighting a powerful, well-funded LGBT narrative, but he also knows he's not alone. He says he's received thousands of heart-wrenching, desperate emails from people who also regret having sex change surgery. Article goes on and talks about two other transgender individuals who also had childhood dysfunction as a factor, and both went through the surgery and the hormones, but they transitioned back to their original gender. Again, transgenderism and related issues can be very complicated, and they're very complex. While some individuals were influenced by painful or dysfunctional circumstances in their childhood, that's not the case with all of them. It's not the case with everybody. And often the reasons for transgenderism are difficult to determine. It's also important to note that some people say that they were confused about gender identity in their childhood, and they grew out of it. And there are, according to World Magazine, studies that show that as many as 80% of children who express signs of gender dysphoria do grow out of those feelings by the time they're an adult. There are others who say that their childhood feelings of confusion actually increased because of the open and experimentalist attitudes that are now being promoted by transgender activists. Now, I mentioned earlier that transgender people seem to be define the chromosomes that determine their gender. Sometimes, though, chromosomes don't tell the full story. There are, in fact, a rare assortment of genetic, biological, and congenital conditions in which not all the identifying sex, gender traits match up the way they're supposed to. And these are often referred to as intersex conditions. And again, this is different from transgenderism. One example is a condition called Swyers syndrome, S-W-Y-E-R-S syndrome. And Swyers syndrome, a developing fetus with the XY or male chromosome, has a defective gene that prevents testes from developing, which in turn prevents testosterone and other hormones from being produced, which continues with sort of domino-like effects that result in the birth of a baby who is apparently a girl and is normal in most anatomical respects, except that there are no functioning ovaries. So you got a girl with XY chromosomes. And since girls' ovaries don't normally produce any important body changes before puberty, this defect in the reproductive system typically remains unsuspected until then. People with Swyers syndrome appear to be normal girls and are generally considered so, even though they have the XY or the male chromosome. And this is just one example of a condition that results in varying degrees of kind of indeterminate or ambiguous sex anatomy. Sometimes these anomalies show up at birth, sometimes they show up at puberty, and sometimes they don't really show up until a lot later, if at all. Again, the intersex conditions are different from that of transgenderism. Again, transgenderism, that describes people whose feelings of their gender do not match their biological sex. Transgender activists, however, will sometimes use these exceptional or out of the ordinary intersex conditions to argue that our traditional understanding of gender as binary, one or the other, is outdated and should be discarded in favor of a more enlightened view of the fact that gender is fluid and it exists on a spectrum of possibilities. Whatever the cause, true intersex individuals often have very confusing, challenging, and lonely lives. At this point, let's notice Matthew 19. Turn in your Bibles to Matthew 19. We'll consider what Jesus had to say and how it might relate to some of these highly unusual situations. Matthew 19, Jesus starts out by answering questions about divorce, and then we'll notice what it leads to. Matthew 19, verse 1. Now it came to pass, when Jesus had finished these sayings, that he departed from Galilee and came to a region of Judea beyond the Jordan. And great multitudes followed him, and he healed them there. And the Pharisees also came to him, testing him and saying to him, "Is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for just any reason?" And he answered and said to them, "Have you not read that he who made them at the beginning made them male and female, and said, 'For this reason a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh.' So then they are no longer two, but one flesh. Therefore, what God has joined together, let not man separate." They said to him, "Why then did Moses command to give a certificate of divorce and put her away?" He said to them, "Moses, because of the hardness of your hearts, permitted you to divorce your wives. But from the beginning, it was not so." It was not the original intent. God did not intend for men and women to divorce. But the hardness of men's hearts has corrupted a lot of things. Verse 9, "And I say to you, whoever divorces his wife except for sexual immorality and marries another commits adultery, and whoever marries her who is divorced commits adultery." His disciples said to him, "If such is the case of the man with his wife, it's better not to marry." But he said to them, "All cannot accept this saying." Not everybody can accept that it could be better for them not to marry. "But only those to whom it has been given. For there are eunuchs who are born thus from their mother's womb." Stop right here and notice two things. Number one, Jesus acknowledges that there are some who are born without a complete set of reproductive parts. This is not what God intended, but we live in a world that has been spiritually and physically corrupted, and some people, through no fault of their own, have been affected by this biological or genetic corruption. Number two, and this is kind of an extraneous side point in a way, we can also notice that Jesus starts verse 11 by saying, "All cannot accept this saying." That is, that it's better not to marry, but only those to whom it has been given. Using the word given, perhaps he's saying that being able to accept staying single is a gift that unmarried people can take advantage of to serve God in a way that you're unencumbered by being married or having a mate. Kind of a side point, though. Going on to verse 12. And there are eunuchs who were made eunuchs by men, and there are eunuchs who have been, made themselves eunuchs for the kingdom of heaven's sake. In the latter case, I assume that Jesus is speaking figuratively and is describing those who've made the decision not to marry but stay single, kind of like Paul did, for the sake of promoting the gospel. Finishing verse 12, to he who is able to accept it, let him accept it. If you're able to accept not being married, so be it. So, yes, there are rare situations where there's been a physical or a biological malfunction, and the sex organs, the anatomy, the hormones, and the chromosomes don't all match up the way they're supposed to. They don't all match up right. And an individual is not completely either all male or female with all the parts in place. So is a biological malfunction such as this responsible for any of the 8 students that I knew last year being the way they are? I'm not certain, but I certainly don't think so. I doubt it. For one thing, the odds seem to be against it. Intersex conditions are pretty rare. The chances of Swyer's syndrome, I've heard, are about 1 in 80,000. Also, 7 of the 8 students who had gender identity issues were in either an academic or emotional support class. So they sort of fit the profile that I kind of talked about earlier. Is that a significant correlation? Probably. Another thing I've noticed, all 8 of them seem kind of needy. They all seem to want attention. The one who was not in an emotional support class or special academic class was actually one of my better students, and I got along with her. Actually, I got along with all the students quite well, but she enjoyed the class. She did very well in the class, and not sure what the issue was with her. But they all did seem to be needy. They seemed to want attention. And the type of attention that they probably would have gotten from me a few years ago would have been, wow, you're one sick, twisted weirdo. I mean, I wouldn't have said that, but I kind of would have thought that. And now, though, I feel sorry for them. One of the girls who dresses very boyishly and cuts her hair very short, I mean, she still looks like a girl. She talked to me after class quite frequently. She told me that she suffers anxiety attacks and that she has issues at home, and went into a little bit of detail on some of it. And I even wonder if a few of them identify as transgender because it does bring them that attention, almost like it's a fad right now. It's kind of the cool thing. Not sure exactly about that, but I do try to pay attention to them. Tried to be nice to them, even compassionate, but without condoning their transgenderism. Actually, wasn't really in a position to speak to it one way or the other. And like I said, they seem to get along well with me. They seem to like me. Some of them seem to want to be accepted as normal, but of course they aren't. Statistically, they are still outside the natural norm. And even if their behavior was inside the statistical natural norm, even if a majority of people felt the way they do, that wouldn't make it right. Perverted behavior was the norm in Sodom and Gomorrah. And we know how that ended and what God thought of that. But we live in a world that's been deceived by Satan. We live in a world that's been corrupted from what God originally intended, and it's in need of his restoration. Mankind's corrupted condition has affected us in our society spiritually, mentally, and physically. No matter what the reason or the cause, gender confusion is not what God intended. It's not to be celebrated. Transgenderism is not what God condones, nor should we condone it. It's actually an attack on marriage. It's an attack on the family. But those who've been affected do deserve our understanding and our compassion, even the ones who get somewhat militant and obnoxious about it. I didn't see too much of that at the school, but they too deserve understanding and compassion. I'm certainly far from being an expert on the issue, but I've learned a lot in the last few months. So I hope I've provided you with a little more information on the state of our changing culture and an appropriate perspective for us as Christians as we learn to cope with these gender-related issues.